Welcome to Power Play on that overdue day when the new official opposition leader finally tested the prime minister in question period. We'll ask our press gallery who won the inaugural battle of wits. Also had on today's show, the London terrorist attacks have Ottawa on edge for the 150th birthday preparations, but the public safety minister is keeping the threat level where it is for the time being. We'll ask our security expert if that's the right approach. And the national chief met with the incoming NDP Green government coalition in British Columbia today. We'll find out what he told them about pipelines and that massive hydroelectric dam that's now under construction there. And conservative leadership convention voting irregularities continue to rattle the party as an official reportedly prepares to come forward to detail the problems that he witnessed. Or she, I guess. We'll have our eye on the leadership race come in to talk about that as well. But first, the world is jittery after those two terrorist attacks in England, and even Canada's reacting. The House of Commons paused for a minute of silence in memory of Christine Archibald. That's the Canadian that was killed in Saturday's attack. And all parties honored the victims.
It is with sadness that I rise and offer our condolences to the family and friends of Christine Archibald, who was a victim of Saturday's horrific attacks in London. As I reaffirmed with Prime Minister May an hour ago, we stand in solidarity with the British people.
Public Safety Minister Ralph Goodale did have this to say earlier today regarding safety here in Canada.
To make sure that we are doing everything necessary and possible to keep Canadians safe and to safeguard our way of life. And we will not be intimidated by the kind of horrible behavior that has been exhibited so recently in the United Kingdom.
All right, let's put all this to a reality check with our expert. Stephanie Carvin is an assistant professor at the Norman Patterson School of International Affairs right here in Ottawa. Welcome to the show again, Stephanie. Always have you on for these sad topics, but let's talk about that. Ralph Goodale does some tough talk there, but how realistically do you prepare for a truck that wants to run down some pedestrians on a Parliament Hill like this? Is it safe?
Well, the mayor of Ottawa, Jim Watson, spoke this weekend and he said, look, there is no 100% guarantee of safety. And he's right when he says that. You can't prepare for absolutely everything. At the same time, I mean, there's some good news here in that, you know, this isn't the first time we've ever run an event like this. You know, we do Canada Day every year. We had Will and Kate come a few years ago. And of course, we have the experience of running the Olympics, which is a huge target, the Paralympic Games. So, you know, we have some experience with doing these kinds of events. And, you know, when it comes to lone actors who are in those van, you know, the van trying to run people over, even in those situations, there are potential remedies. We know that from research done in the UK that around 50% of plots, even by lone actors, have some kind of leakage. Someone knows that this person is up to something. And so if we can actually build community trust, if we can actually work with communities so that they feel free to come forward when they have this information, then we can absolutely, you know, stand a better chance of stopping these things before they get in the van on Canada Day.
Yeah, but we've talked before about this and it's expensive and we're not necessarily on the leading edge of that, are we, here in Canada?
I think we do okay. I mean, we have seen in most of the major plots in Canada that someone has come forward to authorities, and I think that's a really good news story that sometimes gets buried in the headlines that, you know, whether
we don't hear about the ones we foil, right?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in a lot of cases, people have come forward to bring that information, and we're pretty good at building community relations. You can always do better at it. But you're right, this kind of work is expensive. And where, you know, I'm concerned is that good counterterrorism work, we depend on police, we depend on frontline services. And frankly, they're already overstretched. And, you know, the counterterrorism file is adding one more thing to that very busy agenda for the police right now. So it's a real challenge.
I mean, Goodale gives talk about seamless collaboration between police forces, but they tend to look more like silos lined up against each other. Is that a pipe dream or is that a reality out there?
Well, for example, we know that the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, or CSIS, and the RCMP, they've actually worked together on creating a document that will help them manage some of the legislation that the Harper government that came in that might subsequently be changed. But, you know, they are constantly working. There's a lot of outreach that goes on between the federal and the municipal level, a surprising amount. So I think that's a very good thing. We do actually have we have put in place a lot of good communications, but, you know, it's not a natural thing. You're always having to work on it. A lot of time it's personality driven. Mm-hmm. But it's something that I think the national security agencies themselves put a lot of emphasis on.
I guess I look at Ottawa and we're in the nice, innocent capital, and Justin Trudeau is our prime minister with his sunny ways and all that. And I wonder, does ISIS or any other terrorist organization look at us as a target? Or do they say, London's the target, Washington's the target, Paris is the target? Why bother with little old Ottawa?
Well, that's a great question. It's one that security services are always asking themselves. I would say yes, they do. And they have, Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State have all named Canada as a legitimate target. We are absolutely a threat, a target for these groups. Mm-hmm. And so it's something we have to bear in mind. But if you look at the kinds of attacks that we've seen, and I think we tend to lump them together sometimes in terms of, you know, this is just, oh, look at all the attacks that are happening in the UK. But really what we've seen in the past couple of months there is we had a lone actor. We had apparently a returnee foreign fighter coming mm-hmm. from Libya who had extra capacity given to him. And then thirdly, we seem to have a small group of radicalized individuals who've carried out a plot. These are three very different kinds of threats that you have, and it's really indicative of the range of activity that, you know, either ISIS or Al-Qaeda-inspired extremism bring to Canada.
Is it inevitable we'll get hit again? I mean, we basically had the lone gunman that went in the center block. Is another attack somewhere inevitable then?
You know, I don't want to be the voice of doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. I would say the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. They're more than likely.
Okay, you're the voice of doom and gloom.
I am the voice of doom and gloom now. But, you know, I think we are good at what we do, but we have to be reasonable. We can't, you know, all the legislation in the world, all the resources in the world are not going to stop the threat of terrorism. So one of the other things we need to do is promote resilience within Canada. I think that's extremely important, as well as, you know, again, continuously working with communities who themselves are very negatively affected by when they have violent extremists in these in their communities as well.
And don't let the bad guys win. Just keep doing your normal. Act normal. Go to places. Don't shy away, right?
Well, and this is what I would hope people would do for Canada Day, that I do hope they go to events. You know, look around. It's never a bad thing if security agencies or if, you know, the National Capital Commission, if they're reviewing their security policies. I think that's great. But I wouldn't want people to take the wrong message. I think we're going to be okay on Canada Day.
Good stuff. Okay, thank you, Stephanie. Appreciate that. Coming up, we take a closer look at allegations of vote counting irregularities in the Conservative Leadership Convention. Our Eye on the Race sizes up the messy fallout of having more votes cast than the number of people that were voting released to the leadership camps. Please stay with us. Welcome back. The Conservative leadership race has been over for 9 days, but there's some awkward aftershocks as anonymous whispers in the Bernier camp and the Leach camp allege some irregularities in the counting. Our commentator on the campaign is Elise Mills, and she joins me in the studio. Nice to have you in the studio.
Thank you so much.
Look, math is hard for guys like me, okay? So you're going to have to help me here. 141,362 votes were counted, but membership lists, 133,896 names, 7,466 ghosts appear to be floating around. What's going on here?
Nobody's missing anything. They're not ghosts. And I just want to start by saying those who are making the accusation, it's not my job to litigate the argument they've put out there. It's their job to do it. You make the accusation, which I want to say is also quite litigious, because you're making an accusation that there was clandestine maneuvering and ballot box mm-hmm. stuffing. What does that say about your brothers and sisters in the party? You must not think very much of us. And it would have to be an inside job for that to happen as well, if that's how far this accusation's going. It also has not been lost on me that those accusers refused to make a formal complaint with Conservative Party headquarters.
Oh, there's been no official complaint.
Okay. And I believe that you will see a response come from Conservative Party headquarters. They're not afraid to answer this. I think what's concerning is that there's a moving target happening here because they're running to the shadows. We've only had one member of Parliament come out and actually make a case.
If you want to, Bob Deckard, is that the one you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about Tony Clement,
right?
And when I read Bob and Tony's statements, I think everybody sensationalizes it. But when you actually read it two or three times, and I work in communications, as you know, Don, there's no meat on the bone there. What are they actually trying to say? Let's get down to the areas that they've cast doubt to. So, mm-hmm. as you know, we were both at the leadership convention. Mm-hmm. Not only did we live stream the counting process so mm-hmm. everyone could see it, but the media was asked to take a tour of the process. Mm-hmm. Maybe an error that we did make was having volunteers not prepared for the level of on-site voting and not quickly collecting and entering data the way that, in the speed that we required them to do it. Plus, the 13 polling stations were the jobs of the EDAs. The party went out there and said, you can have them, we'll help you through the process, but we're not in charge of them. That data collection's a problem, too.
Okay, let's assume, I mean, you're our communications whiz, too. Why isn't Maxime Bernier out there putting this controversy to rest? Why didn't he come out and say, there's nothing to this, there's an explanation for this, and then instead he's doing the opposite, saying, well, I want answers. Shouldn't he clear the air? Because the leadership's tainted a little bit.
Well,
by this.
He's tainting Andrew's very real, very legitimate win. Right. I think he has. I'm surprised. I thought more of Maxime Bernier. Unless they've got something that I haven't seen, and I think that would be very difficult to prove. But unless mm-hmm. they've got that, they should be quiet. And the word of the day should be unity. I think this is going to be. We talked about this convention as not being fractured.
Yeah. You said there was pretty good unity.
There was people obviously were upset, but nobody was nasty. And you saw the picture of all the leadership candidates coming mm-hmm. together. Bernier is attempting to unravel that one thread at a time right now. And I would hope that what I would hope today is that someone like Tony Clement or Maxime Bernier was sitting next to me mm-hmm. because I have some questions too. And there are very, very, very disappointed conservatives.
So there's no chance people were voting twice. This is
no.
Laura Payton was talking to the conservatives.
4, and
she thinks it's someone got an error message, and then that somehow triggered a count. I don't know.
I'll give you an on-site experience as I'm waiting 20 minutes for them to believe that I'm Elise Mills, the conservative commentator.
Well, no one knows you, of
No
course.
One knows me, and mm-hmm. people are yelling out, if you can't believe her, how are we going to get this line going? But the couple in front of me had left their ballots back in their home province. And what they had to go through to prove they hadn't voted, and the checks and the scrutineers from the different campaigns came in, and then the observers right. came in. The line moved slow because of this. And, data.
There's a digital footprint, apparently, of these ballots still. You don't see a recount coming out of this, do you?
Why would there be a recount?
I mean, people ask for it, I guess.
If Maxime Bernier is hoping to click his heels and he's suddenly going to become leader out of this, this is not the right way to go. If he's got a serious complaint, then why hasn't he issued a legal complaint to the party?
Yeah.
Why has he not written a letter to Deloitte? Why does he... We haven't seen any legal representatives come out. And if anything, none of those guys will come on camera. The only person that's come out is Tony Clement to the Toronto Star.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, we'll see what this goes.
Thank you, Don.
Nice to have you in the studio. We'll see you again soon.
Yes, thank you.
Coming up, we get our 8 expert eyes on political strategy to advise the new party leader on a response to these allegations. And we'll talk about the Prime Minister's latest appearance on U.S. television networks. And we'll have the National Chief from the Assembly of First Nations to discuss his meeting on pipelines and hydro projects with the incoming BC coalition government. Please stay with us. Okay, welcome back. After he was in Niagara, the Prime Minister met with the Chilean president, and he met with reporters after that and talked about the Quebec Premier's wish to open constitutional talks. Here's what he said.
Canadians elected our government on a very clear platform of growing the middle class, of working hard for those who are working hard to join it, on investing in our communities and the infrastructure needed to create better growth, better opportunities for all, whether it's public transit or green infrastructure or a national housing plan. We have heard very, very clearly the priorities of Canadians who are worried about the way the world is changing, worried about the opportunities that are going to be there for their kids, worried about climate change and its impact on our country and in our future, but also on what it means for jobs of the future. We have a tremendous range of challenges that Canadians have talked to us about time and time again. We intend to focus all our energies on the priorities that Canadians, including Quebecers, have highlighted for us. As I've shown many times, I'm more than happy to work with premiers and mayors on issues of import to our citizens, to work with them on issues of growth, issues of adaptation and mitigation of climate change, issues of international importance, and we will continue to stay focused on the things that matter most to Canadians and expend our political energies on serving Canadians in their priorities, and that does not include reopening and renegotiating the Canadian Constitution.
That's the world's longest no. All right, it's time to bring together Ottawa's brightest strategic minds to sort through this conservative vote-counting fun and some curious developments in the NDP race, and we'll talk about that Constitution stuff briefly. Yes, okay, Lindsay Doyle, Assuma Strategies, is of unwavering see-no-evil liberal orientation. Former conservative insider Michelle Austin in the same office, but very different, see lots of evil thinking about the government. Robin Sears of the NDP Voice, as always, he has to feign excitement about developments in the NDP race for the leaders. Greg Weston will take sides somewhere, we just don't know where yet.